But we cannot send a message that, well, some illegal immigration is okay. And that's been the problem of the last 4 years.
Well, Scott Jennings from CNN, the problem is really a whole lot more than that. And we'll get into it on the John Carlson Show this morning. Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is the last Tuesday in January, January 28th edition of the radio program of record. We'd love to hear from you. Go ahead, give us a call or text us your thoughts at 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. Here's a thought for you. Here's a thought about these ICE raids you're hearing about. I was talking with a good friend yesterday. He said, how'd they manage to find these people so quickly? Has that occurred to you as well? I mean, they've picked up now thousands. ICE agents around the country have picked up thousands of people in the country illegally who have committed violent crimes. All these raids, and you don't hear the media highlighting even one example of, he was just picking grapes and was completely, other than that, completely leading a quiet, lawful life, keeping to himself, and they went and they picked him up. You haven't heard a single anecdote about that, have you? Just like Tom Homan said, we are going after people in the country illegally who, A, have committed crimes, B, are national security threats, C, have received due process in this country and have been ordered out of the country by an immigration judge, and they have refused to leave. So those are the three priorities. And they have gotten murderers, rapists, child molesters, child abusers, major drug dealers. That's who they're picking up. And that, back to my original question, how'd they get them so quickly? How did they know where to find them? You know what the answer is? They've known all along where they are. ICE has known all along where the really bad eggs within the illegal alien community are. They just haven't been allowed to pick them up. They've known all along where the worst of the worst are. They just haven't been authorized to pick them up. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the most shocking aspect of this crackdown by ICE and drug enforcement authorities and the FBI. They've known where they are. They haven't picked them up because they're illegal aliens who have had shelter given them by the Biden administration, not just these sanctuary mayors and governors. You know, did you hear the DEA just arrested 50 members of the Venezuelan, the notorious Venezuelan prison gang, Tren de Aragua? Aragua, rather. So now we're finally getting to them. And, of course, the response we're hearing, did you see the actress Selena Gomez making this weepy 30-second video? They're after my people. They're coming after my people. Really? These are the people you hang out with? Violent felons who happen to be in the country illegally? By the way, I wonder how many takes she needed to get that 30-second video down. He pauses for a sip of nice hot decaf coffee. All right. That's the most important takeaway for you. When your friends say, wow, Trump's not playing. He's going after these guys. They picked up thousands. Yeah. And Biden could have done it too. They chose not to. Think about that one. They knew where dangerous felons were living. They knew that they were continuing to commit crimes. They knew they're in the country illegally and could be deported. And they let him stay. They left him alone. Just how much do you have to hate your country to allow that to happen? Somebody please, I'm open-minded. I'll put you right to the front of the line here on the text line or the phone line. Somebody please tell me the upside of allowing a violent felon or even a serial criminal who is not a felon to remain in your country illegally and not have any visit from immigration authorities. Tell me the upside of keeping dangerous criminals in the neighborhood. Have you seen the latest out of Seattle, where the governor announced that there will be strict protocols about immigration authorities entering schools and that churches will be sanctuaries as well for people here illegally who are worried. Again, Tom Homan has he said it 90 times or 900 times? We are prioritizing illegal immigrants by get the worst first. That's who we're going after. And as you can see from the people they've picked up, he's good on his word. We are going after national security threats. We are going after criminals, starting with violent criminals. And you have this attempt now underway to cause panic. When you hear reports, news media reports, and people are panicking, people in the country, undocumented people in the country are panicking. That's because they're being panicked by activists within the illegal immigration community and in the service providers for illegals. They're deliberately panicking these people. They might come to your school and snatch your fourth grade daughter. This is the kind of garbage that they are doing. They are trying to foment chaos. What they could and should be doing is, no, don't worry. They're only going after the people who are dangerous and committing crimes. Don't worry. Unless your son is a member of a street gang, a violent street gang, then don't worry. They should be putting people at ease. They are doing precisely the opposite. Politicians are playing the game. The media are playing the game. And it is all being done for political purposes to try and turn up the heat on the political heat they're happy to panic and frighten these people if it will help them turn up the heat on stopping these raids. Guess what? The raids aren't stopping. And I am, on the one hand, euphoric. On the one hand, I am so delighted, so happy to see that these raids are happening. On the other hand, I'm infuriated that so many dangerous people have been allowed to remain in our communities when they could have been deported. They knew where they were all along. Just one more reason to not just oppose, but to utterly despise the previous administration. They left that southern border open, knowing full well that it would mean more girls, more children would be trafficked across the border. They left the southern border open, knowing full well it would mean more drugs, particularly fentanyl, getting into our communities. They knew full well that large numbers of illegals would create havoc in our communities. They did it anyway. And even if they didn't do it that way initially, it became quickly apparent that all of these things were happening. Did they do a 180? No. They finally, belatedly, began changing their policy midway through their fourth year. Gee, I wonder why that was. Maybe they said, oh, this is now becoming kind of an important issue. Geez, we thought it would be no big deal and that the Latino community would be thrilled to see so many more people who look like their Latinos, fellow Latinos, coming across the border. When your party is obsessed with race, they'll make assumptions like that. Those assumptions blew up in their face when they belatedly realized, hey, Hispanics, Latinos, who are voters, they don't like illegal immigration any more than anyone else. They don't like crime in their communities committed by illegals any more than anyone else. They don't like seeing their schools with people who don't speak the language being flooded, human services being overwhelmed, chaos in the streets, bedlam. They don't mind all of that. So they deliberately did nothing. In fact, they encouraged illegal immigration. Then they got worried that, hey, this issue has some traction. Some Democrats, like John Fetterman, were trying to prevail on them. This is just part of the weak on crime view of the political left, the progressive left. And it cost them the White House. And now they're going to watch the greatest mass deportation in American history take place. And by the way, and they say, oh, no, they're going to deport millions. Barack Obama deported millions. Barack Obama had some liberal policies on the border, but they also kept illegal immigration growth to a minimum. Tom Homan used to work for Obama. Obama gave him an award. Yes, Tom Homan, the border czar for Trump. This is how radical the Biden administration was. I love saying that. This is how radical they were.
I just love your research. I didn't know that about Obama and the history there of Homan. That's pretty impressive, John.
So Tom Homan, carry on. I mean, you are a genuine American hero. So are the men and women of the Border Patrol and ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, and our other federal partners in law enforcement, the FBI field offices, the Drug Enforcement Administration. I mean, they are all stepping up. They're all making this happen.
John, and this is active in all states. People are asking me, yes. And on the way home yesterday.
We got a couple from Seattle.
Okay, because yesterday on the way home, Hood Canal area, and I won't go into depth because I'm sure there's, you know, but there was a major, major response of county sheriffs and police at one home that people just wondered about. And there were so many there. People are saying, do you think this is going on in our state and our area already here to find these people that we know are here?
Again, they know and they have known. And Biden's people knew, and they wouldn't authorize getting rid of them, even though they're dangerous people. And by the way, illegals who are quietly keeping their head down and going about their lives, they are disproportionately victims of these illegal, violent criminals. They are disproportionately, they're also victimized, less likely to report the crime. So they're more likely to be a victim, and plus they're closer to where the criminals hang out and socialize and live. So it just shows you how almost deranged these political leaders are, that they will keep these threats to people's safety in their communities rather than go against the ideology of open borders. And Tom Homan says, no, that's all going away. That's all going away. So, three words for ICE and the Border Patrol. Turn it up. Turn it up. Keep it going. You're doing a great job. It is 6:21 on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Boy, do we have a lot of other great stuff. This case involving the Lakeside girl, the 21-year-old Lakeside girl, Teresa Buchhold, I believe.
How about Youngblood?
Youngblood. It's Youngblood, B-L-U-T. Youngblood has taken an incredibly bizarre and genuinely frightening turn. And I'm going to be sharing that with you a little later on this program. And by the way, the Seattle Times is not reporting on this very disturbing angle in this story. So one more reason why the John Carlson Show is so indispensable. It's all coming your way. And so is Philip J. Vandervoort III with the first social media sweep of the morning. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning.
TV theme Tuesday, guys. Any idea here?
For a moment, I was going to say Austin Powers, but not quite.
Digging the bongos, though.
Yeah, yeah. Man from Uncle. I just saw it.
I was actually thinking, was it the Man from Uncle? David McCollum and Robert Vaughn.
Yeah.
Got the vibe.
Spoof on James Bond, United Network Command for Law Enforcement. Thought it'd be good with the stories you've been sharing so far this morning about law enforcement. Busy right now.
Making it happen. All right. Hey, by the way, for all you DEI people working for federal departments and agencies who are now on paid leave because the DEI offices have been shut down, thank you, Donald Trump, if they want to get busy, maybe they should join ICE.
Okay.
Yeah, they're probably looking for a few good men, a few good women.
Sure.
You know, hey, more, you know, just move from one federal agency to another. Enhance your pension. Go round up bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, That's my public service tip of the day on the John Carlson Show. Philip J., what do you got?
Well, let's continue a little bit with what you were hitting on in the last segment here, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I'm looking at a post on X from the official U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration Twitter account for the Rocky Mountain Division.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, an early morning raid. They created a makeshift nightclub and, along with local partners, seized drugs, cash, and weapons. This was an invite only. So they ostensibly sent these invites out to people that they thought might be in the criminal world.
Yes.
Okay. And according to this post by the DEA Rocky Mountain Division, dozens connected to the Tren de Aragua gang were there. The bus took away nearly 50 illegal aliens.
Oh, yeah. I made reference to a bus to 50 gang members. This okay. These are the details.
So this seems to be, the site, other Denver area law enforcement agencies. And like I said, with the DEA, they kind of had a multi-jurisdictional group of agencies, and they seem to have arrested 50 illegal aliens and many connected to Tren de Aragua. So there's that out of Denver. Yesterday,
no longer very trendy.
Not going to be. Yeah. Is it trending on social media? The arrests. Now, big news yesterday was this whole financial markets, stock markets, losses for big tech companies, particularly Nvidia. And I thought Nvidia was mostly still about graphics cards. I first learned about Nvidia because they were making graphics cards for computers so you could do faster gaming, like better than the consoles like the Xbox and the PlayStation on your home computers. But turns out the Chinese AI company DeepSeek, which is run by, again, like TikTok, the Chinese government. I'm looking at a post and it sums it up saying a cheaper AI alternative from a Chinese startup sends U.S. stocks plunging and threatens the aura of invincibility surrounding America's tech industry. There are some caveats to this. Another financial news reporter that I follow out of San Francisco writes, after racing to the top of the App Store, DeepSeek pulls the plug on U.S. registration. So you can really only get DeepSeek if you're in China, it sounds like. So there are restrictions on registration, and there are tons and tons of questions about are they basically ripping off American companies, American-led companies, and things like that. But NVIDIA shed almost $600 billion in market cap yesterday, turned into the biggest one-day loss in U.S. history. But we'll see if this is a blip on the radar or if this is some larger trend. And going to be a major story of China overtaking the U.S. when it comes to artificial intelligence.
It's causing a huge panic on Wall Street.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen a meme on one post that essentially equates DeepSeek to a Trojan horse. And that was one of the criticisms of TikTok, too.
Yep. It is coming up here on 6:31. When I come back, boy, this is one of the most bizarre turns in a murder investigation I have ever reported in 30 years on the air. You're about to, and it involves that Seattle girl who graduated from Lakeside a few years ago. Wow. 21 years old, and wait until you see what she was involved in. Coming right around the corner.
Just a happy birthday to a longtime friend of Northwest Rock and Roll, the great Merrily Rush. 1968, a hit that had her in as a nomination for Grammy for Female Artist of the Year. But who would pay attention to a young girl from the Northwest when you had so many John coming out of L.A. and New York and Motown?
And she stayed local.
And she stayed local. She was a show-up. Anything music. She was always there with her current husband, Billy Mack, Heidi, of both. If you know them, tell them Mark Christopher, John Carlson, Philip J. Say hi. Neil Rush, former husband, he still keeps in contact and all doing well.
I thought Billy Mack was a detective down in Texas.
Watch for Billy Mack's
book.
That's what
Steve Miller told me.
Yeah, Billy Mack, hubby to Merrily, did a book on Dave Niehaus and the Mariners. Outstanding. Look for it.
Huh.
Yeah.
It is 6:38. Okay, we have been following the story, bizarre story, of Teresa Youngblood, 21 years of age, graduated from Lakeside Academy. Very posh, very private, very expensive. And according to her family, began acting very strangely, pulled away from them, got all her belongings, said she was leaving, and disappeared. Next anyone hears, she is implicated in the murder of a Border Patrol agent in Vermont. She was sitting with in the car. She was driving the car. Sitting next to her was a man identified as a German national. And both he and she were armed. She allegedly just got out of the car and started firing at this poor border agent, killing him. Another border agent apparently returned fire, killing the German man and wounding Teresa Youngblood. Well, now the plot thickens. And we are learning that apparently both the passenger and Ms. Youngblood were members of a militant trans terror group. Here is journalist Andy Ngo from Portland, who has been uncovering this stunning development.
These are two people who are linked or members of a trans terror cell that was based in California, who was involved in three prior murders. I'm quite in shock. The murders happened in late 2022. There was one earlier this month, and then now in Vermont, that would bring the body count to four murdered people across the United States.
What is going on here? Remember, the two people, Felix Bockholt, who's trans, goes by the name Ophelia, or went by the name Ophelia. He's dead now. And Teresa Youngblood, who went by the name Milo, were up near the Canadian border wearing all black. She was wearing openly a gun. They were wearing like armor, protective tactical gear. And it so alarmed a local hotel clerk that she called the police. They've been under surveillance. And then finally pulled over near the Canadian border. And that is where she, Teresa Youngblood, got out of the car and started firing. Again, both of them leftist trans militants. The guy who goes by the name Ophelia has been in America apparently on an H-1B visa. Teresa Youngblood, who again goes by the name Milo, uses pronouns XE, XEM, and XYRS. Officer David Mayland was the border agent who was killed, ambushed. But Andy Ngo spoke with a Berkeley, California woman named Jessica Taylor who confirmed that the German man, Felix Bockholt, who goes by the name Ophelia, is trans. And that other trans activists have been pressuring people who knew him or her to remain quiet. Again, Teresa Youngblood was wounded in what became a shootout after Officer Mayland was ambushed. She was injured and has been charged. Her accomplice, also armed, is dead. So this is a stunning turn of events in this story. They are apparently connected to a violent trans, you want to call it a cult or a terror cell, whatever, a person who goes by the name Ziz. The person who goes by the name Ziz is believed to be involved in the murders that you were just hearing about. Jack Lasota is his name, and he is accused of trying to kill an elderly man in Vallejo, California, who made the mistake of letting a couple of these trans people live on his property and form what was supposed to be an artist's commune. They would live in trailers and then have shipping containers to store their belongings. But after they moved in, they stopped paying rent and became squatters. And the owner, an elderly man, got them to agree to leave once they repaired their car, but then they just reneged and stayed. So he called the police. And for that, they tried to stab him to death. They took out an eye. They impaled him with a sword in the chest. And somehow he managed to survive the attack. He ended up shooting and killing one of them. And they were facing attempted murder charges. They fatally attacked him on the sidewalk outside his property. This time they stabbed him to death. But this is he's not the only person to die, according to Pennsylvania State Police. Two other elderly people, Richard Zajko, who's 72, and his wife Rita, were found inside their home dead. So this is getting kind of scary, kind of spooky. Everything that I just told you about the trans angle is missing from the Seattle Times report this morning. They report that a man named Max Snyder, 22, arrested after midnight last Friday, has been charged with murder in Solano County Superior Court. It turns out that he and Teresa Youngblood were high school classmates. She has been frequently in contact with a person of interest in that homicide that I just mentioned to you, for which Mr. Snyder has now been arrested. Both Youngblood and Snyder, both of them, attended Lakeside. After graduating from Lakeside, Snyder attended Oxford, brilliant in math, and Youngblood went to the University of Washington. So apparently they're involved in some kind of a murderous cult that has now claimed the lives of at least four people, the most recent being Chris Malland, the 44-year-old Border Patrol agent who was ambushed and shot by Miss Youngblood, according to police. It's 11 minutes. Man, this is strange. But this is what we now know. Good going, Andy Ngo, and a very interesting article also in the Seattle Times adds more context. It is 11 minutes to 7 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. We're back on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. What's this? Things getting back to normal in Seattle. A couple of murders in the last few days. Two drive-by shooting suspects arrested in Seattle. Well, 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 let's see what we learn about these people. Preston Phillips from Como 4, tell us.
Two men are in jail tonight accused of firing a gun from their car's sunroof in Pioneer Square. On Sunday, just after 2 in the morning, officers were outside of Stadium Nightclub when they saw a drive-by shooting. And while investigating, police determined that the driver and passenger fired the weapons. They were arrested. Multiple guns were recovered. The 36-year-old male passenger is a convicted felon. The 37-year-old driver is under Department of Corrections supervision for murder. Both were arrested for drive-by shooting and unlawful possession of a firearm.
Oh, a murderer out driving around shooting at people. Another example of our Department of Justice under Jay Inslee, Department of Corrections. Under supervision, I see he's being closely supervised at 2 in the morning while he's driving around capping off rounds. So here we go. Two suspects illegally possessing guns, both prior felons, one of them a conviction for murder. There we go. These are man-made problems. Man-made problems in Seattle. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. When we come back, why things could be looking up. And I'll tell you why here in Washington State. 3 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning, hour number two of The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. How you doing? Okay. We're going to be local here this segment of the John Carlson Show because I was at the Roanoke Conference over the weekend. Lots of KVI listeners there. It was sold out. Wonderful Ocean Shores conference getaway. Urge you to go next year. Again, you want to reserve early to make sure you can get your spot. It's all very casual, and it's great for networking. It's great for kind of intellectual stimulation, but also you just meet a lot of great people, and it's all very casual.
So why would I go? I hear it. It sounds great. You talk about it every year. What am I going to gain?
To learn things and meet people. And if you're interested in politics, if you're interested in anything about politics, you'll learn a lot more. And you can get involved if you want. There's elected officials there. There's political pros there, members of various interest, you know, groups, pro-Second Amendment, pro-property rights, pro-life, pro-parents, you know, rights of parents. You know, a lot of major players there. Brian Haywood was there.
He did all the initiatives, everybody.
The initiative. And does this great new news site, Haywire.com. That's H-E-Y, Haywire.com. Check it out. or .org, haywire.org.
Good clarification, .org.
So a laid-back get-together for a weekend, you're at the ocean, get to meet the powers, the strengths of the Northwest here, political.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, share meals. It's fun. They do comedy sketches and everything. I mean, it's all, there's about a 17-member board and about, again, 450, 500 people sold out. It's just a lot of fun. And I was on the kickoff panel on Saturday morning. So we had a packed room, and the topic was America First, Washington Last, how Republicans can win again. Because let's face it, we're celebrating everything that happened nationally, not so much here in Washington. Nationally, Republicans control the White House, the Congress, the House and the Senate. Here in Washington State, the Democrats control the governor's office and have wide majorities in both the House and Senate. They won every statewide office. There are 10 congressional districts. Democrats now control 8 of them. And even though 4 of the 7 initiatives passed, either the legislature passed them to keep them from going on the ballot or the natural gas initiative passed at the ballot, 3 others fell short. So a lot of people are thinking, oh, man, this is terrible. This is crazy. It's never been this bad. We've never seen it. This Republicans have never been as low as they are right now. And I said, yes, we have. We've been in deeper holes than the one we're in now. And every time we came back. Sometimes it took a couple few election cycles. Sometimes it happened right away. But we came back. Here's how bad things are. Right now, in the Washington State House, Democrats lead 59 to 39, the 98-member House. They have similar size majority in the state Senate, but let's just focus on the House so you don't drown in numbers. Democrats lead 59 to 39. You say, man, that's a 20-seat gap. Republicans would have to win 10 races just to pull even. They've been in deeper holes than this. 3 times since I've been involved, since I've been around, this has happened. In 1976, that was the election that made Jimmy Carter president, and a Democrat, a very odd Democrat, odd in a good way, Dixie Lee Ray, not a politician. That was a year where a lot of non-establishment types got elected to public office. Dixie Lee Ray was a scientist. She did chair the Atomic Energy Commission, and she used to be on the J.P. Patches show, always coming in to talk about what was happening at the Pacific Science Center. So a lot of people felt very comfortable around Dixie Lee Ray. Anyway, that was the year she was elected. After the 19, and there was the post-Watergate presidential election, too. So the Republicans were in a pretty bad place, and after the election, there were 62 Democrats, 36 Republicans. So it's even worse than it is now. In 1992, that was the year of the Democrat landslide, Bill Clinton president, Patty Murray, first elected to the U.S. Senate, again, 1992, and a Seattle congressman, Mike Lowry, populist, anti-Reagan Mike Lowry was elected governor. If you think Bob Ferguson is liberal, Mike Lowry was the Pramila Jayapal of his day. Okay? It would be like if we had Pramila Jayapal as the governor. Anyway, Mike Lowry is your governor. Patty Murray is your senator. There were 8 congressional districts in Washington at that time. Democrats won 8 of them. There was only one Republican member of Congress left standing. It was Jennifer Dunn in East King County suburbs. In the State House of Representatives, there were 65 Democrats, 33 Republicans. Basically, a 2-to-1 advantage for Democrats. Again, now it's 59-39. Back then, it was 65-33. And in 2008, Barack Obama rolls to an easy victory here in Washington. The Democrats control the House of Representatives 62-36. So there you have it. You know, 3 times where Democrats had more members, an even bigger supermajority than they have now. Well, what happened? How did the Republicans crawl out from that kind of a disastrous election time after time after time? Well, after the 1976 election, the Republicans started regrouping, reorganizing. The Democrats began feuding among themselves at the federal level. Ted Kennedy on the left of Jimmy Carter, on the Washington state level, Jim McDermott on the left of Dixie Lee Ray. And in the midterm elections, Republicans won 13 seats. The economy was lousy. People thought that problems were just getting worse. Republicans went from 36 seats to 49. Democrats, of course, lost 13 seats, went from 62 to 49 in one election cycle. One. Democrats and Republicans ended up tied. The Republicans winning 13 seats, went from 36 to 49. The following election cycle, 1980, was a presidential election year. Ronald Reagan rolled over Jimmy Carter, won 44 states, including Washington. And after that election, there were 56 Republicans and 42 Democrats. So Republicans went from 36 members to 56 members in 4 years' time. Let's go back to 1990, after the 1992 election. Again, Democrats had an even bigger majority, far bigger than the one than the Democrats have now. Again, right now it's 59-39. Back then it was 65-33. But Mike Lowry began governing like the Seattle progressive left-wing a Democrat that he was. He was very upfront about most things, except he said he would only raise taxes as a last resort, and he proposed a tax increase a couple weeks into office. That hurt him badly. There was actually an initiative. I believe Linda Smith, a state senator at the time, later a member of Congress.
Yeah, she kind of jumped in on initiatives before Tim Iman did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, she had an initiative that would restrain spending to the growth of inflation and population. There would be a limitation on spending growth to inflation and population. It was called Initiative 601. It passed. Also, but keep in mind, the Democrats so dominated the legislature, they wouldn't even give the bill a hearing. So Linda Smith went the initiative route. There was another proposal. This one on the crime front. That would mandate that anyone who committed three serious felonies, Class A or violent Class B felonies, would be sentenced to life in prison without parole. It was called Three Strikes, You're Out. It was the first one. I've got to declare myself here. I was the co-author. I led that campaign. It received 76% of the vote, one of the highest totals ever. Again, that was a bill, but a bill that the Democrats would not give a hearing to. So we went the initiative route. Are you ready for this? In the 1994 midterms, so the very next election that came up, the Republicans won 29 seats. They won 29 seats in one election. They went from 33 to 62. Well, they actually won 27 seats, and it was such an incredibly stunning performance that two Democrat lawmakers, Dave Mastin from Eastern Washington, Tom Campbell of Pierce County, ended up leaving the Democrats and joining the Republicans. 29 seats, one election cycle. Democrats went from 65 to 36. Republicans went from 33 to 62. They did it by amplifying the extremism of the Democrats and running on a proactive conservative ideas that challenge the status quo. That is precisely what they should do right now. And, of course, in 2008, Democrats, again, 62 to 36. This is the Obama election during the recession. So the Democrats had a big majority. In the next midterms, the Republicans cut it from, they won six seats, so they went from 36 to 42. And in the 2014 midterms, they won another six seats, went from 42 to 48. Eventually, they put together a majority coalition in the Washington State Senate. Had 23 Republicans, and they got two Democrats to support them. Tim Sheldon from Shelton and Rodney Tom from Bellevue. And this coalition, the state Senate majority coalition, ended up holding the line on taxes in the early days of the Inslee administration and forced him to cut the college tuition. So the bottom line here, folks, is, yeah, we've been in deeper holes and we came out of them and we see some of the same seeds now. You have extremism among the Democrats. You've got a bill. The Democrats say they're going to get serious about gun violence, but they've got a bill that they're pushing through committee last week, held a hearing that would combat gun violence by reducing prison sentences for people who are violent with guns. It's kind of odd. They're extreme on taxes. The Cascade Media Crosscut PBS Elway poll shows that two-thirds of people say if we've got a deficit, if we've got a gap, we expect it to be filled with spending reductions, spending restraint, not with new taxes. So people are in no mood for higher taxes, and they are in no mood for more ideas that make crime, drugs, and homelessness worse. And yet that is what the Democrats are proposing, a homeless bill of rights that, think of everything awful that is happening on the streets of Seattle, it would lock that in as a right. That's you folks who live up in SeaTac, that's Maya Gregerson. She's behind that. The bill that reduces criminal penalties for people who use guns in the commission of crimes? Yeah, that's Roger Goodman over in Redmond. Again, radical Democrats, they're not from Seattle, they're from the suburbs, but they're there too. And so one final thing is the same poll asked people, over the next year, do you think things will get better or worse? They asked, you know, do you think things will get better or worse for you and your household, for your community, for our country, and for our Washington state? Majority said things will get better for them and their household. By a slim plurality, they said things will get better in our community. By the same plurality, 49 to 45%, they say, even though they voted against Donald Trump by 18 points, they said things will get better in the United States, 49 to 45. But when it came to Washington state, 36% said things would get better and 51% said things would get worse. That's the only area, household, community, country, and state, that's the only area where people, a majority, think things will get worse. I'm telling you, folks, we are teed up for recovery. All the signs are there. All we need to do now is follow through. Speaking of follow through, Philip J. going to follow through with a social media sweep coming right up on The Commute with Carlson. Good morning.
TV theme Tuesday, John.
I don't know this one. Philip J., do you?
I wouldn't have known it either. But this one came as a listener request from Greg and Everett.
Car 54, where are you?
No,
I don't know.
Not exactly.
Okay.
Saturday mornings. What, last hour we
was
had
a cartoon?
The theme from Uncle.
Yeah.
No, so they decided in about 1971, let's bring a show to Saturday morning.
Oh, the girl from Uncle?
Lancelot Link, Secret Chimp. Do you remember they had chimpanzees dressed as different characters in dress suits
I'm
and
pleased
gowns?
To say
you had Monty Perry. You know, he had different characters. Lancelot was a, you know, secret detective.
This seems like it's almost a live-action version of the old Banana Splits, from what I'm
Yeah, but it was more like Command of Uncle. Look at
it.
They're playing video. They're playing drums and a whole bit, and they moved their mouths and then hired voices. And way to go, Greg.
every Saturday it was a war. Would we watch Banana Splits or Hot Wheels?
Yeah, okay.
And I almost was always overvoted by the women in our family, who wanted to watch Banana Splits, which I thought was just dumb.
Never had sales in cereals like we did at that time. That were pretty much all the ads during all the cartoons of Saturday
Hot
morning.
Wheels all the way. Okay, Philip J., what do you got going in the social media world?
I can springboard off of something that we were talking about yesterday when I remarked about having to pay $25 for a pitcher of beer to watch the Sunday NFL football games with friends at a bar. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort, $25 seemed expensive to me. And I've heard about the price of sneakers, collectible sneakers. These would be your very rare Air Jordan types, and I'm sure that there are others that go along with this, but a lot of them revolve around the Michael Jordan, Air Jordan brand of basketball shoes. And thieves broke into, I should be more specific, a single thief, because it was caught on video, shot out the windows at a sneaker shop, a collectible sneaker shop at the Alderwood Mall in Bellevue. And Mark, I'm going to play some audio.
Wait a minute,
here.
Alderwood is...
Alderwood Mall in Linwood, I should
Linwood,
have said.
Yes.
Thank you. And shot out the glass windows door, broke in, and stole about $16,000 worth of shoes. Fox 13 reporter AJ Genneville spoke to the Sneak City owner They're at Alderwood.
An armed thief gets away with a small fortune in sneakers.
One of them was a $9,000 shoe. The other one was a $6,000 shoe and then a $1,000 shoe that night. So almost $20,000 just in three pairs.
Not only is Anastasia Lemley, co-owner of Sneak City at Alderwood Mall, out the cost of the shoes, but she's also paying for the massive amount of damage left behind during the break-in. She tells me looking back at the video, it's obvious to her this guy knew exactly what he was doing.
We kind of connected all the dots of this looks like it could be the exact same person.
And there's some suspicion that the person captured on the surveillance video at Sneak City up at Alderwood Mall is connected to many other possible break-ins, including one at a shop in the U District. That Sneak City owner also wants this person put in jail. This person sounds like a KVI listener with their tough-on-crime attitude.
Lemley says they've seen this guy shopping in their store, too.
Even if our merchandise doesn't get returned to us, we just want this guy to be locked away or whatever happens with him for him to stop hurting other small businesses, because there's probably eight at least in the Seattle area that he's hit, and maybe even more that we don't know about.
So how many more could there be is another question.
Well, he's using a weapon.
Yeah, right.
Okay, that's how people get dead.
Yeah.
This is how people get seriously hurt or dead.
And here's one more part of the Fox 13 story with a co-owner of a Seattle store that also resells collectible sneakers. And this guy says he's seen this guy in his store in Seattle.
This guy has just been on a rampage.
Word of the thief traveled fast through the sneaker community. And other business owners like Gus Holbein recognized the crook.
Same guy. 100%.
Holbein said the thief broke into his store too.
Are they circulating pictures?
Yeah, there's a surveillance video between a couple of different stores and a couple of different break-ins. They still just haven't pinned down the suspect. But, man, I knew collectible sneakers got expensive, but I didn't know they got $9,000 expensive. So
yeah, I mean, you know, that's how much you'd pay for some baseball cards.
Yeah,
you know?
And I know women, you know, a lot of times purses get very expensive. Handbags get very expensive. So similar deal
so,
there.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta treat this stuff like jewelry. I mean, you really do have to keep them locked up. Wow, that's a lot of dough for a sneaker, though.
that you ultimately can't wear. Yeah. I mean, at least with a handbag, you could take it out.
That's right.
Take it around town.
It's 31 minutes after the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. When we come back, Art. Catholic charities trying to sabotage the enforcement of immigration law against violent criminals in the country illegally? Wait till you hear this video we got coming up. Back we are, the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Some text line messages. Peter Burian, remember I kicked off the hour talking about how, yes, Republicans are in a pretty deep hole in Olympia. You know, things are going great nationally, not so great in state politics. Democrats have a 20-vote majority in the House, 59-39, a similar size gap as in the state Senate. And I said, hey, we've been here before. It was that way after the 76 election, after the 92 election, or the 2008 election. Peter Burian says, our state is a basket case with all the crime and squalor today. It's just disingenuous bringing up 1976 as if things are worse, were worse then than now. That wasn't happening back in 76, and there's no far left like there is controlling things. Same for 1992. It's an apples and oranges comparison. Peter is partly right. He's right in 76 that there were many more moderate and even a few conservative Democrats in the legislature, which makes that majority, you know, a little less firm. But one thing that was the same is that you had progressives pushing the mainstream. You had a feud breaking out. And that could be happening in 2025. He says it was same in 92. In 92, actually, it's a lot like it is today. 92, the Democrats just ran the table, and the Republicans had fewer members of Congress than they have now, and way fewer legislators. Again, they had a 65-33 majority in the state House. And they governed like leftists. And, you know, Bob Ferguson is a student of history, and don't be surprised if he learned a lesson from that, because the Democrats lost a historic number of seats in that first midterm. So it's not apples and it might be apples and oranges in 76, not apples and oranges at all when it comes to what happened in after the 92 elections. It's a lot like it was back then. Ray and Kathleen and Stanwood, Ray and Federal Way also say, you know, it's different this time. It's not the same, but it's not all that different. So, like I said, I think we are teed up for the opportunity to make a recovery. A lot of it will be in how Bob Ferguson handles things. And, you know, we will see. The jury is out. The jury is not out when it comes to Tom Homan, Donald Trump's man on the ground, border czar, to head the deportation efforts. Tom Homan making it very clear that he's going after illegal aliens who have committed crimes in this country, who are dangerous, national security threats, and people who have been ordered out of the country by an immigration judge who refused to leave. He's talking with Caitlin Collins from CNN, who says, I hear that you're not going to say that schools and churches are no-go zones for immigration raids. And, you know, how can you countenance that? Well, here's how Tom Homan defends himself.
On what you said earlier about your big priority right now is deporting public safety threats and national security threats. How does changing the ICE policy that allows agents to conduct arrest and enforcement at churches and schools help with that?
There's no safe haven for public safety threats and national security threats. People say, well, were you really going to a high school? Well, people need to look at the MS-13 members and 10 DIAGWA members who entered this country, a majority between the ages of 15 and 17. Many are attending our schools. And they're selling drugs in the schools, and they're doing strong arm robberies of our students. So we not go into schools or hospitals as a matter of practice, but if it's a significant public safety threat or a significant homeland security threat, there's no safe haven. We'll go where we need to go to take them off the street.
But you obviously are someone, you've been working on the border for years, sir. I mean, you got an award from President Obama, for people who don't know watching. And you also, you know, have worked through these administrations. This was the policy that's been in place, I believe, since 2011. And it wasn't changed before. I mean, do you have any reason to believe that elementary schools or churches are harboring, you know, these violent immigrants who are here illegally?
Well, like I said, when the circumstances arise, we got a national security threat, a significant public safety threat. We're going to go, we got to go. Whether it's a school, a church, a hospital. The national security is important. And look, name another law enforcement agency. Does the FBI have those requirements? No. Does DA have those requirements? No. So ICE shouldn't have those requirements either. We have a national security responsibility. We're going to take these people off the street. If it's out of school, that's what we're going to do. Again, it takes a lot to get approval to go into school or church. But if there's a national security threat, we're going.
I just love this guy. I mean, we are so lucky to have him. What a national resource he is. There's a lot of great people serving in the Trump administration. This guy's at the top of the list. He has inspired members of the Border Patrol and ICE and other law enforcement agencies like DEA like no one else has before. They trust him. They look up to him. They know he has their back. This is what happens when you've got a police chief or a sheriff who really has the trust of the men and women working for him. And by the way, should tell you, you know, you keep hearing from these sanctuary mayors and city managers and governors, local law enforcement will not be participating. Every time that they're in town, the cops, the sheriff's deputies, the state patrol officers who are on the beat, who are doing the job at ground level, they thank them. They shake their hands and say, thank you for what you're doing. So this is great. Now, you want to see the complete opposite? This is, you're about to hear a clip from the Catholic Charities attorney for Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She's an attorney for the Milwaukee Office of Catholic Charities, giving legal advice to the illegals that Tom Homan is looking for. Here's how you can avoid them.
Hi, my name's Barb Graham, and I'm an attorney at Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Milwaukee in the Refugee and Immigration Services Program. This is a video about knowing your rights if Immigration and Customs Enforcement approaches you. All people living in the United States, including people who are undocumented, have certain rights under the United States Constitution. If immigration officers, what we sometimes call Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, come to your workplace, they must have a valid search warrant or the consent of your employer to enter non-public areas. If you are undocumented and immigration officers come to your workplace, be aware of the following. First, do not panic and do not run away. If you are frightened and feel like you need to leave, you can calmly walk toward the exit. If you are stopped, you may ask if you are free to leave. If the officer says no, do not try to exit the building. If you are questioned, you may tell them you want to remain silent. Two, you have the right to remain silent. You do not need to speak to the immigration authorities or answer any questions. If you are asked where you were born or how you entered the United States, you may simply refuse to answer or remain silent. If you choose to remain silent, say so out loud. If they ask you to stand in a group according to your immigration status, you do not have to move.
You believe this? This is at a time when they're going after violent criminals who are in the country illegally. And Catholic Charities in Milwaukee is dispatching this kind of advice. Here's what this attorney did not say. Section 287 of the Immigration and Nationality Act allows ICE officers the authority to arrest illegal aliens without a judicial warrant. No judge has the authority to issue a warrant for a civil immigration violation. So that attorney there was being flat out deceptive in order to help illegals who have committed violent crimes in this country to avoid law enforcement. Just thought you would want to know. You know, I happen to be Roman Catholic. I happen to give to Catholic Charities here in the Seattle Archdiocese. If they're spending their money on stuff like this here locally, if they're doing that, I'll never give them another dime. But again, it shows how desperate the open borders, pro-illegal immigrant crowd has become. All right, you got 12 minutes to 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Or you can move to an area that is not designated.
Welcome back to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Great having you with us. Yesterday on the show, I told you about this exciting new website that is, I guess you could call it a news aggregator. You think of the Drudge Report. When you go to the Drudge Report, you see a bunch of headlines about what's, you know, stories that are in the news. And then underneath the stories, you see all of these news sites that you can click on. Well, now we've got one of those for Washington State. It's called the Haywire. Haywire, that's with an E, haywire.org. It's set up by Brian Haywood. Takes a lot to set up something like this, by the way. But again, when you go to it, you see a headline, you see a bunch of other stories that are featured on the right-hand side, dozens of other stories that are featured that have been in the headlines in the last couple of days. And then underneath that, several videos that they are featuring. And underneath that, Washington media sources, and there's over three dozen of them. Not only, you know, like the Seattle Times, but also the Columbia Basin Herald, Clark County Today, the Center Square, Bellingham Herald, the Daily Record of Ellensburg, the Post Millennial, that's Ari Hoffman, the Stranger, left wing in Seattle, another dozen TV and radio stations, and prominent media voices. And what do you know? There's the John Carlson Show that you can click on. Again, a terrific new news site for Washington State, exclusively for Washington State. Check it out, haywire.org, H-E-Y-W-I-R-E.org, haywire.org. It's already hour number three, you guys. Hour number three of The Commute with Carlson. Appreciate you letting us be part of your listening day. Commute with Carlson has been going on since 1993. And if you wish to text us, which you couldn't do in 1993, all you got to do is use our call-in number as a text line. 206-421-5757. It's 206-421-5757.
Might need it next Monday, John. Everybody texting in like, yeah, we've got a little snow on the ground here. Just keep an eye on it Sunday into Monday.
Well, you see, you wanted Christmas snow, and it just might arrive a little over 5 weeks after the fact.
I hope. As soon as I'm done with the snow, I can take my lights off the house, everybody, over at Hood Canal.
And your neighbors can stop circulating that petition. Yeah. All right?
Yes, they can.
It is so great having you with us. And I want to start this hour the way I talked about this at 6:30. This is just strange and chilling and even a little frightening. But that story about that young lady from graduate of Lakeside Academy, Teresa Youngblood, has taken a very bizarre turn. It appears that she is connected to a transgender cult that has engaged in several murders. So you're wondering, you know, how can a 21-year-old graduated from Lakeside, everybody, you know, liked her and said she was, you know, sweet and nice and everything else. How could she, on a traffic stop in Vermont close to the Canadian border, when she's driving a car with a passenger, all of a sudden start shooting and killing David Malland, a Border Patrol agent? Well, it's part of the company she's been keeping. Journalist Andy Ngo, who's from Portland, who is incredibly courageous. This is the guy who has made it his mission to uncover what's going on within the world of Antifa. And other violent extremists on the left, the kind of extremists the media aren't interested in learning more about. They've attacked him, several times. They have stalked him. They are constantly threatening him. Anyway, he is the one who has uncovered that, first of all, Miss Youngblood and the guy she was with apparently are a trans duo. So there's that entire angle that has not been revealed. And that they are tied with a kind of a commune cult in California. And that a man that Teresa Youngblood was involved with has been tied to a murder down there. I mean, this whole thing is just getting too strange for words. Now, the Seattle Times has a very good article by David Gutman and Sophia Schwarzwalder, where they bring up the fact that she's tied to this guy who was just arrested for his involvement in this murder that happened in Vallejo, California, that they both went to Lakeside together. She went off to the U. He went off to Oxford. And that this cult is apparently involved in several murders. Before I go further, let me play this quick report from Andy Ngo.
These are two people who are linked or members of a trans terror cell that was based in California, who was involved in three prior murders. I'm quite in shock. The murders happened in late 2022. There was one earlier this month, and then now in Vermont, that would bring the body count to four murdered people across the United States.
Okay, so we are dealing with not only people who are psychopathically deranged when it comes to politics, but are genuinely dangerous. And we're going to learn a lot more. Now, here's what is in the Times story. 22-year-old Max Snyder was arrested late last week and charged with murder. He and Teresa Youngblood were classmates at Lakeside. She is also now in jail, facing two weapons charges, and will almost certainly be charged with murder for killing David, border agent David Malland, goes by the name Chris Malland. And she and this guy, Max Snyder, her old friend and classmate, who she was apparently going to marry, they took out a marriage license just a few months ago, are both implicated in two different murders. Snyder might also be involved in a double homicide investigation in the state of Pennsylvania. What the hell is going on here? Snyder, after graduating from Lakeside, studied computer science and philosophy. She went off to the UW. Both of them are political radicals. Youngblood on her Blue Sky social media account, Blue Sky, is basically for liberals, progressives. It's a Twitter. It's an alternative to Twitter for liberals. And she follows Antifa. Remember, what tipped off authorities to her is that she and the guy she was traveling with, whose name is Felix Bockholt, who goes by the name Ophelia, he is trans as well. They were dressed all in black, including wearing tactical gear, and she was carrying, open carrying a pistol. Again, just two people in Vermont now, several miles from the Canadian border, are walking around dressed all in black and armed when they search their car after the shooting. Weapons, materials that could be used for explosive devices, lots and lots of ammo. They don't know what they were up to over there. I'm sure we will learn. But back, so there's three people we're talking about. We're talking about the guy that she was with, who's a trans woman, who Teresa Youngblood was in the car with when the shootout took place, where she ambushed Agent Malland and killed him. She was armed. He was armed. They were both shot by border agents returning fire. He was killed. So Mr. Bockholt, who goes by the name Ophelia, he's at room temperature. He's gone. He's dead. She was wounded. She's now in jail. And the guy that she was apparently romantically involved with, Max Snyder, he's being charged with murder in California. So you've got two Lakeside grads who are going to be facing murder charges. Probably not something they'll be putting on their brochure there at Lakeside. No one answered the door last week at the Kirkland address that Teresa Youngblood and Max Snyder listed on their marriage license application. Neighbors said a couple had moved in within the last few months, but they didn't know them. Probably them. Snyder is being charged with the stabbing death of 82-year-old Curtis Lind, who was stabbed to death just last week outside his home in Vallejo. This same man, 2 years ago, was stabbed several times, including impaled with a sword through the chest and stabbed in the eye. He lost that eye. He was set to testify against his alleged attackers in an upcoming trial. The murder was probably to keep him from testifying, kill the witness and the victim. He was attacked 2 years ago, the stabbing that didn't kill him, by three young people who were staying on his property. They said they wanted to form an arts commune. He said, okay, that's fine. Gave them a piece of the land that they could live on, and they would pay him minimal rent, and they would go about, forming this arts compound. The whole thing was a ruse. They never paid him any rent. Or if they did, they stopped paying rent. And when he tried to collect, they said, well, our car doesn't work. He said, well, when you get it repaired, then you need to leave because you're not paying rent. And, of course, they repair the car and wouldn't pay him rent anyway, so he called the police and they attacked him. And then when, as the trial came up, he was murdered, slaughtered right on the street in front of his property. And now they say there's a couple that I don't know where the angle is here with this couple in Pennsylvania. They're dead, too. So, like I said, this update regarding the case of this young Lakeside grad, now it looks like two Lakeside grads, has taken a very ominous and bizarre turn. One thing, the Times story is very useful, but it leaves out the trans angle. They don't mention that both of the people in the car approaching the Canadian border are not only trans, but they're involved in a trans organization. I'm guessing Max Snyder is also going to follow in that category. The young lady here, Teresa Youngblood, goes by the pronoun XE. So we're talking just someone who's just truly deranged.
Instead of XY or XX, it's XE now.
XE.
Sounds like the model on a car.
Yet another new gender.
Yeah.
Yes.
I got the new Pontiac Firebird XE.
The name of this group that they're apparently involved in is called ZIZ. Z-I-Z. It sounds like acne. Z-I-Z. And... or excuse me, that's the name of the guy who leads the cult. His real name is Jack Lasota. So, several moving parts here, and I think they're all going to be coming together. The Times story, again, avoids mentioning the trans angle, but it has been confirmed by someone who knows both of them, a Berkeley woman who spoke at some length with Andy Ngo. So that is what we know. There's more details at Post Millennial. That's our good buddy Ari Hoffman's publication. And I'm sure that we'll have more details on tomorrow's show. But that's what we know at 20 minutes after 8 o'clock this Tuesday morning here on the Commute with Carlson. Again, Philip J. Vandervoort III is right around the corner with a social media sweep. We've got a lot going on. And Philip J. says he's got a classic nugget here from Rashida Tlaib, one of your favorite members of the squad in Congress.
She was talking about egg prices.
Oh, she is. Now she's concerned about what you pay for your breakfast at the grocery store. Usually she's just hating on Jews. So this is a step up. This is good to hear. We'll see what she has to say coming right up as the Commute with Carlson continues 20 minutes after 8. Barney Miller?
Ooh, you're so really, really close.
Yeah. Put that as a foundation for the idea here, I guess.
This show is a spinoff of Barney Miller.
Okay. I was close.
Yeah.
Let's see. I don't know.
It was Fish.
Fish. Abe Vigoda?
Abe Vigoda.
Oh, my goodness.
Tessio from The Godfather.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, things did not end well for him in that movie, if I recall correctly.
TV Theme Tuesday. Good one, Phil.
All right. It is 25 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, social media suite, social media from socialists. Go for it.
Yes, Democrats, squad members, progressives are figuring out, wow, eggs are expensive. They didn't seem to notice that eggs were expensive, for instance, when Kamala Harris was running for president. But now they seem to notice that eggs are expensive. So we're going to start off with the Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib here in just a split second. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. This comes from a House floor speech by Rashida Tlaib. And she's attempting to attack Trump here, but she leaves out some really important information about the minimum wage in the state of Michigan. So she's going to complain about the federal minimum wage, but only a few states actually have that as their minimum wage. Almost every other state now has a, you know, they've acted on their own. They have a much higher minimum wage. So she's going to complain about Trump and the egg prices and the federal minimum wage. And then I'll try and provide some of the information that she's glaringly omitting here.
Eggs in my district are $9.19. Or as one resident said, it's 10 bucks to buy eggs, Rashida.
It's good math right there.
I want you to think about this because the federal minimum wage is $7.25 right now. So grocery prices we know are out of control and our government is failing to lower costs for working families. This is why my residents don't call it the minimum wage. They call it the starvation wage.
Starvation wage. What she's failing to tell you is that in Michigan, their minimum wage is about to go up. And it's an oddity. I've seen a lot of different states do minimum wage, and it always seems to start at the beginning of the year. The new wage kicks in, right? So it went up on January 1st to $10.56 an hour. But then on February 21st, it's going to go up nearly $2 more. So in just a couple of weeks, it's going to be up at over $12.50 an hour in Michigan. I noticed that she left that out in her floor speech. She didn't want to mention that her constituents are getting way, way above $7.25 an hour for minimum wage.
Nobody works for $7.25 an hour, which goes to show how irrelevant a federal minimum wage really is, because the market wage is much higher, even though you don't have to pay the market wage. If you don't pay the market wage, you're going to have a tough time finding good labor.
Yeah.
So, again, the problem with minimum wages is when they get so high that businesses are priced out of staying open as long as they want to or having as many employees as they want
to. Automate their labor with the kiosks.
This is what happens.
There is a trade-off for that. So, and, you know, it ends up hurting the youngest workers the most. Okay, very good. And then here's one more. This goes back to what I was talking about a little bit earlier on the show with the stock market trading valuations for tech stocks and the big stock market losses yesterday for companies like NVIDIA. This all revolves around DeepSeek, the Chinese AI open source platform. So on the Stranger's website, they have something they call the AM slog, where they just kind of crank out half a dozen to a dozen stories that are kind of coming up in the morning news cycle. And the AM slog writer over at the Stranger is Natalie Graham, and she wrote this. China's new free open source and way less expensive to develop AI platform, DeepSeek, just went live. In doing so, it upended the stock market by instilling fears that the AI spending boom to build big data centers and chip facilities and power sources may not be necessary, since DeepSeek succeeded by doing it faster, cheaper, and better with old hardware, according to Axios, the political news site. The tech stocks known as the Magnificent Seven, Alphabet, which is Google, Amazon, Apple, Meta, Microsoft, NVIDIA, and Tesla, could lose more than $1 trillion. And here's how she concludes her summary on this. I am experiencing lots of delicious schadenfreude right now. So there she is cheering on China, who's undercutting American companies. And we still haven't sorted out if DeepSeek is doing all this on their own independently. We still don't know if they're kind of incorporating or stealing intellectual property. We'll have to wait and see how those things shake out as well. But very revealing from the Stranger.
That would be a first. Yeah. No, very interesting. Okay. You have got 8:30 on the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. More interesting comments on the text line, and Burien expanding their camp, their anti-camping, homeless camping ban. Again, that's straight ahead, these details, as Burien pushing back on King County in a very big way as the John Carlson Show rolls along. All right. 36 minutes after 8 o'clock. Have you guys seen the promos for the movie Captain America? The new
Captain
America?
Is this a new
America?
One? Or am I thinking of...
No, it's the new one.
Okay. I think I did see a bit of it.
Really cool. You know, Harrison Ford plays the president of the United States.
Okay, I did see that.
Very cool.
Harrison Ford, and I thought, what's that? He's in this? Okay.
And then we hear this about the movie. Captain America represents a lot of different things, and I don't think the term America should be one of those representations. It's about a man who keeps his word, who has honor, dignity, and integrity. Again, Captain America represents a lot of different things, and I don't think the term America should be one of those representations. It's about a man who keeps his word, who has honor, dignity, and integrity.
Hmm.
Who is saying that about Captain America? Anthony Mackie, the actor playing Captain America.
Okay. He's Falcon as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just trying to remember my Marvel library here. Why not call it Captain Europe?
There's a... Because he'd never get off the ground.
Captain South America.
There's a movie I no longer need to see.
Captain Columbia. Come on, you guys.
It is 38 minutes after 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. Okay, I mentioned this camping ban in Burien. We have been covering this since, remember, Dow Constantine's King County sheriff, who he appoints, and Burien contracts with King County for their police coverage, for their police services and protection. They said they would not enforce the Burien camping ban, even though it has not been struck down as illegal, and in fact, it resembles several other nearby camping bans, including Bellevue and SeaTac. The Burien City Council responded by pushing back on the county, and I believe suing them. Good for them. Well, now Burien City Council has gone a step further, and they're expanding their camping ban.
In a 5-2 vote, the Burien City Council voted in favor of an emergency ordinance regarding unlawful public camping. The ban would make it illegal for people to reside, sleep, or have personal items such as blankets on any public property at any time. The decision aligns with the Supreme Court's decision in Grants Pass versus Johnson, allowing cities to ban sleeping in public places. This is the same camping ordinance that King County deputies have refused to enforce. In a statement, the agency responded to the decision, saying in part, "It is our initial opinion that this ordinance, as written, is enforceable, as it no longer contains vague language found from prior ordinances, nor does it allow the city manager to rewrite the boundaries of the no camping zones at any time without notice." The agency says it's aware of the ordinance pending in state court and will monitor court decisions and adjust accordingly.
All right. So now they're expanding their camping ban, and all of a sudden it's okay. Congratulations, Burien City Council, A, for not backing down, B, for not watering down your camping ban, but instead strengthening it and forcing King County to cry uncle. They did not want to. Good for you guys. This is the way to go. All right. We see, similar, towns, cities beginning to push back in Marysville, and now in Everett, they are saying if you are three times convicted in their jurisdictions within a particular period of time, I think it's within a two-year period of time, if you're convicted of three criminal offenses, even if they're minor, shoplifting three times, using drugs, any kind of variant of, misdemeanors. If you are convicted three times within a two-year period, instead of getting the city of Seattle treatment where they basically either dismiss the charges or give you a day in jail, it's a minimum 30-day sentence. It's It's a minimum 30-day sentence. Bellevue is now weighing on whether they should do the same thing. They've got a rising star on the Bellevue City Council there named Jared Neuenhaus. And he is pushing this, and we'll see if his colleagues agree to go along. This is wonderful, though. This is wonderful to see this trend of accountability. I'll tell you one thing. When you get a 30-day stint, it makes you gives you time to think. Also gives you time with no drugs.
So is this based on a fresh start, or like if you have people that have all these convictions and all the stories you've shared, and we heard of people like 50 convictions, 45, but no arrests have been made, they've been let out, go home, wear the bracelet. Would that be inclusive, saying, oh, by the way, you're already at 3 now?
I don't know. That's a very good point. I don't know if you have to get 3 offenses fresh within this jurisdiction, or yeah, just any 3. I haven't seen the proposed ordinance in Bellevue. So, and I'm not sure what the, if anyone knows up in Marysville, yeah, and can okay let us, that yeah would be good. I think, by the way, I think they should simply say, no, if you've got three offenses on your record and you do it here in Marysville, you're about to find out Marysville is not the kind of city where you should be shoplifting or doing drugs. And you just 30 days right off the bat. And all of a sudden, guess what? Either he's going to get his act together or he's not going to come back to Marysville. It's something to think about. All right. Putting out the call to all of you who are blood donors. The Blood Bank, now known as Bloodworks Northwest, has declared what they call a code red blood shortage. They have only half the donation appointments needed to adequately supply the region's hospitals. The Morning News Tribune reporting that the holidays, along with recent storms and wildfires, have caused people who normally give blood to kind of fall out of the habit. You know, some people just do it on a regular basis. They especially need type O negative. So if you are able to donate blood, if you've been meaning to get around to it, I donate from time to time. I've got my gallon pin. Please consider doing so right now. Just go to the website, and there's a Bloodworks Northwest Center, which we commonly refer to as the Blood Bank. There's a Bloodworks Northwest Center near you. That's bloodworksnw.org. Again, bloodworksnw.org. All right. Scott Jennings on Donald Trump, mass deportation, and his critics. He's on speaking from his perch on CNN, the only watchable thing about CNN.
I would just point out that if you came to this country illegally, you're already a criminal, illegal immigrant. You've already broken our laws, even if you haven't been arrested yet or charged with it. If you're here illegally, if you broke our laws, then you're going to be targeted. Now, maybe you're not going to be a top priority today because there's other more dangerous people here, but we cannot send a message that, well, some illegal immigration is okay. And that's been the problem of the last 4 years. Basically, Biden and Harris were like, just get here and it'll probably work out for you. That is no longer the communication strategy of the U.S. government. The strategy is don't try us. Whether you're the president of Colombia or somebody who just walked across the border illegally, do not try us. It is not going to work out for you, period.
Okay. Normally, I don't disagree with Scott Jennings, but here I will only because I think he understated. He said, if you know, you're keeping your nose clean, there's no problem. You know, it's no big deal. But in fact, the Biden administration took a very different view. Their view, and again, this is the open borders ideology.
Just get here and it'll probably work out for you.
And that has turned out to be the case, because open borders ideology is we don't care where you're from And though we prefer you be a person of color, and you can go wherever you want. And if you happen to get in trouble with the law, don't worry. We won't cooperate with the government, with the federal government, to get you out of here. Well, the end result of that is that you've got a lot of very dangerous felons who are in the country illegally who are just hanging out, not even hiding in plain sight, living in plain sight. Here's what I'm talking about. Have you noticed how quickly Tom Homan and Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE, managed to get all these people swept up? How quickly? They've already arrested thousands of illegal immigrants who are dangerous criminals, who've done terrible things, murderers, rapists, child abusers, child molesters, major drug kingpins. All this going on. And yet, look how quickly they were able to find them. Someone asked me the other day, say, how do you think they managed to do that? Here's how they managed to do that. They knew where they were all along. They just didn't have permission to go get them. They knew where they were all along, but Immigration Customs Enforcement wasn't permitted, wasn't green-lighted to go and scoop them up and get them out of here. Why? What's the upside of saying, you know, it's a very important part of our community's diversity that we have dangerous felons who are living here illegally be part of the mosaic of diversity in our town? What's the upside of allowing someone who's not even living here legally, committing crime after crime, and still being allowed to live here legally? And the most important thing is, whatever you do, don't notify immigration authorities that this serial burglar, this serial car thief, this drug dealer, this man convicted of strike assault, the most dangerous thing you can do is let authorities deport him. Don't do that. Just shows how twisted, almost how sick the previous administration has begun, and that whole ideology of open borders, how it makes communities less safe, less desirable, and especially for people who are living here illegally who don't break other laws, they are especially vulnerable. They are disproportionately the victims of crime of illegals. All right, you've got 10 minutes to 9 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All the time we have for today's show. Want to make sure that you're listening tomorrow, because there's a new organization called budgetbreakdown.org. Budgetbreakdown.org that is running commercials trying to raise awareness about what's going on in Olympia. And I will tell you, and Paul Graves will tell you, what it is that's going on that you need to know about tomorrow's show. Till then, have a great day.